This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, with Jonathan Hutton, Chad Withrow, and Paul Kuharski.
Second half of the show is here. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Lunchtime is here. They have plenty of options for you that you can see on their menu through the Edley's app. Also online, edleysbbq.com. Family take and bake meals, brisket lasagna, the barbecue shepherd's pie, and more. And for lunch, try the Edley's nachos, the barbecue loaded fries, or the Tuck special. You can now go into Edley's, 12 South and Sylvan Park, and opening June 1st, their location in East Nashville. Alongside Paul Kuharski in Brentwood, I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. Chad Withrow on furlough this week. David Reed is the chairman of the board. You heard him mention the Vols tight end, getting the tight end from Georgia. Miles Campbell announced that he's headed to the University of Tennessee. We will get the latest with Austin Price. That's coming up at 1:15. At 12:30 today, so in roughly 30 minutes, Gary Smith, who's the head coach of Nashville's MLS team, Nashville SC, will give us the latest details on the plan to return to the pitch. Looking forward to that. Always a great conversation with a great storyteller with Gary Smith. He'll join us today at 12:30. South Carolina, Paul. Their plan in place currently is they're going to open campus for the fall semester, and then they are telling everyone no fall break. We're canceling fall break, suspending face-to-face classes after Thanksgiving. So the fall semester will start on time, no fall break, go until Thanksgiving break, and then classes resume online during the end of November and December, which is what, a two-week period, I guess. I have not seen the recommendation for how they would handle the spring semester that would start back up towards the end of January. But that's the latest from one SEC school.
Well, I scoffed when you mentioned it initially, but I do see some sense in it for a couple of reasons. So fall break, everybody leaves, goes all over the place. Everybody comes back from all over the place. And then you do that same thing again for Thanksgiving. So you're cutting out four occasions of of this chance to kind of spread out.
Yeah.
Overspread. Not the good kind of spreading out. The bad kind of spreading out. So that seems to be safe. But David raised a very good point for skeptics like me, which could they also be saying, what is the least we can do to charge full tuition get kids back off campus and get back to virtual stuff? And this probably qualifies as that. Heck, you could probably do a little less than this and still get it. And I think there's some real questions. I don't have many friends with college-aged kids, but I think that's a very fair question. I mean, I would think there are severe discounts due if your kid is in a virtual college as opposed to on campus. A big part of what you're paying for with these giant tuitions is the campus experience. Let's be honest. Sure, you can get a lot of the same things out of a Zoom lecture, but that's not the same as walking to and from the classes on a campus and, you know, having all of the experiences of campus life. And that's a big part of what you're paying for. Not just the education goes beyond the classrooms. So I'm curious to see if other schools come out with similar kind of things. I do like the travel cut down element of it. That seems to make some sense to me.
Again, that coming from South Carolina and their university and how they plan to handle things. And that's on, we're reading this through the state, the local newspaper there. Lost my train of thought. Here we go. The SEC, they're voting later this week on Friday about returning to campus and getting programs going. So I'm guessing we'll see more of this framework from individual universities leading up to Friday's discussion. And we'll get more on that, too, with Austin Price from Tennessee's standpoint as well. The good news with the coronavirus, I was reading on Washington Post, we've reached a point where there are more tests available than people reaching out to get them. That's outstanding.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's good news. That's great news if you're wanting your favorite sports league to get back up and moving. Also, the UFC last week while I was out held three events over 8 days. They had one positive test, and they had over 1,200 tests executed in Jacksonville at their UFC facility there that they set up. So if you're looking at the framework of how they handled things, I'm sure other leagues were paying attention to it. That's another great sign. You had one positive test out of 1,200, and the system that they set up did its job.
I was out more this weekend than I have been in some time. It included a search for a skateboarding helmet.
Yeah.
And
Simon's a skateboarder now, not Paul.
Yeah.
Not Paul.
I just wanted to say a few words about masks. And I know this has become a huge national debate, and I know everybody's got their own feelings on it. I think the lack of masks on people around here conflicts with the Southern hospitality and Southern politeness that we sell ourselves as possessing here. I think it goes against the Christian ethos that many of us want to be part of here. And for what my words are worth, I'm trying to wear one when I'm in a store or whatever. And again, it's not because I think I have it. Everything I've read says, you know, it's to protect other people. And so that's my favor to you, me, the big generous hearted guy, right? My favor to you to make sure that you're not getting anything I potentially have. And so it seems to me if we all think of it that way, it's a pain in the butt. Sure, it's inconvenient. It doesn't seem like an American kind of thing. We always see it happening in other cultures, and we've always kind of, seems to me, looked down on it and all of that. But it's being suggested to us to do it. And I was out to Dick's and Academy Sports to find this helmet. Dick's workers were wearing them. Academy workers weren't even wearing them. And I'm telling you, 5 to 10% of the people who were shopping were wearing them, which just struck me as way too low a number and a lot of people just ignoring it. If people like Dr. Bill Schaffner are saying it's wise to wear them in a store like that, and you're going in for 10 minutes, 15 minutes to buy your kid a pair of shoes, find him a new baseball bat and stuff, I have trouble coming to terms with your rationale to not adopt that advice. And so I'd encourage people to do it. I'm doing it. I don't really understand you not doing it. I don't think it's a big political issue. I think it's a health issue. The health people are suggesting we do it. So why wouldn't we follow the health people's advice?
Yeah, it definitely is the health recommendation behind it. But those same people told us what you just said, Paul, that it's not going to help you from contracting it. It's only going to help you
if you
have it. Right. But it's not going to help you if someone else next to you has it and you breathe it in. It won't stop the virus from getting to you. It only prevents the virus from spreading from you. Right? That's what Schaffner and others have told us.
I'm not positive that's correct, but listen, but anybody out there could be asymptomatic with it. And if you don't want to spread it, and I think for the majority, we're all good people. I'm looking at these people out there and I'm not thinking these are a whole bunch of bandits who are eager to spread the coronavirus.
Right.
I'm thinking they're not listening or they don't care what they're being told. And I think most of them are religious, good intentioned, Southern good hearted people. So I'm confused as to why they don't want to do what they're being encouraged to do.
Well, encouraged and mandated are two different things, right?
Yeah. Well, and I don't think it's the government's place to mandate it, right? We don't want it to be mandated.
You're also
we want a suggestion.
You're also in a state that's opening on Friday.
Right.
Like that's the other part of it.
With open, yeah, and I think maybe we're confusing, like opening, but it's open with a suggestion to wear these masks when we're out and about. David, you have something on this?
No, you're operating under the assumption that all those people who do not have masks have the virus, and they're going to automatically spread it to those of you who are out and about and don't want to get the virus. We're still,
well,
we're actually
concerned
now
about the one person that would have it. That's asymptomatic. I mean, that
we all just do it like they're advising us to. It's safer for everybody.
Okay. It sounds like you're scared to the point where you just need to stay home is what it sounds like to me.
I'm not that scared, but I'd rather not have it. I've heard Tony Baselli and people talk about it, and I'd rather not spread it. And I'm doing my part. In case I'm asymptomatic and I have it, I don't want to give it to you, so I'm going to wear the mask.
Okay, well, then the way to make sure you don't get it is stay home, wash your hands, keep away from people. And if you're that frightened that someone not wearing a mask out in public is going to give it to you, stay home, wash your hands, and stay away from people.
No, but here's my other option. Live in a civil society where people are following the recommendations of the health people, and I can, A, buy my kid a helmet, and B, not have to face off everyone who's not following the guidelines that are put out by people like Dr. Bill Schaffner.
I think it's a great sign that Schaffner has told us. The last time I was allowed to be on air, we had him on, and he told us that he doesn't see us shutting down again for a second time in this future. And the states that have opened up, we specifically brought up Florida, have not seen a spike in cases since they've opened up. In fact, more people are contracting it in states that have the stay-at-home order.
I don't think the mask is fear. I think the mask is polite.
Well, I mean, I went out last week and wore a mask twice. So, but, you know, if I go back to the family farm, I'm not wearing one.
No, not outside. We're not wearing a mask at the skateboard park where you have distance. I'm not wearing them outside. Man, I keep 6 feet away from anybody I pass outside, all of them. I go into a store. I pull it off my front seat, my car, I put it on, go into the store, do my stuff, come out, take it off. I think that's all the expectation is. And I know not everybody's going to do it, but I'm surprised that I was out on Saturday in two stores and I saw so few people doing it.
Over the course of the last 2 weeks, the percentage of people in Nashville who have tested positive has actually fallen around 1%, under 10% for the first time in a while. And today in the briefings have moved to Mondays and Thursday with the Metro Health Department and Mayor Cooper. And today, 28 people have tested positive within the last 24 hours. That was the latest update here in Nashville.
I mean, I'm sorry to hear that. I feel better and better about everything. But I guess what I'm saying is let's not be overconfident to the point where we do dumb stuff that prompts it to get worse.
Coming up, we will get back into some of the bigger topics of the day. We'll discuss The Last Dance. If you'd like to join us, by the way, you can give us your big takeaways. I was a big fan of it. Paul enjoyed it. I know Chad loved it. Reed, did you watch last night? We haven't asked you about this.
No, I haven't watched last night. It's going to be a long week of work for me, so I headed to bed early last night, so I'll have to catch up on everything, but I'm looking most forward to listening to you guys describe it the way it ended, the dramatic way in which it ended. That's what I'm really kind of looking forward to.
And the fact,
Paul, last week, one of my big criticisms about it was it not going in chronological order. It sounds like the last two episodes had to be. Definitely enjoy that.
Well, later, also get Reed's plans for producing 3HL this afternoon.
Oh, well, a little double duty time. I was wondering what was going on and why he had a big work week. Now I understand, Reed. JT's out this week.
The takeover.
When we come back, let's go in detail of the coffee can gimmick symbolism that Phil Jackson used and whether or not we enjoyed that story. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. Day 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. They are now hiring at their East Nashville location, which reopens Monday, June 1st, so 2 weeks from today. You can apply online at edleysbbq.com/jobs or apply in person this week at the Edley's location in Sylvan Park. The imagery, the setup and execution of what Phil Jackson did to put a bow on everything that the Bulls had accomplished with their second three-peat and the six championships in 8 years, where, as Steve Kerr and others described it, everyone brought a note and wrote it down on a piece of paper of what the team meant to them or what that run had meant to them. And they each stood up in the final meeting, read their letter to the team, and then placed that letter in this coffee mug. I had images of an old Folgers can, aluminum Folgers can, Paul. And they placed it in there. Jordan read a poem, placed it in there, and then he lights one match. Phil Jackson did. And burned the letters and said, this is the symbolism of everything coming to fruition. Congratulations. You know, thanks for being part of such a great moment. I thought it was awesome. And I'm not describing it near as great as it probably was. When Steve Kerr said it's one of the better things he's ever been a part of as a player or a coach, I would have loved to have seen the cameras behind the scenes for that. That's the one part of the season where the cameras didn't follow Jordan around.
Yeah, it was over. I didn't get quite a clear handle on how far removed from the season that was, but it had to be pretty quick, I would think. The way the documentary portrayed it, you know, they jammed a lot of stuff in there about Reinsdorf and the coming back for a seventh shot and all of that in there before they circled back to that. So it made it feel like there was time, but it was probably a day or two. It was probably only a day or two before they assembled.
After the parade and everything.
Yeah, that's your locker cleanout meeting.
Yeah.
And so I thought it was effective too. The burning, it always seems weird to me to make it go away, because I would have kept a copy of what I wrote too, you know, in my memory box, so to speak. You know, you want that. If I'm Jordan, I want to burn the poem to like put an ending to it, but I also want a copy of it from my scrapbook or, you know, in my box of stuff that I keep.
I found it interesting that he compared it to therapy, because his wife was Phil Jackson's wife was involved.
The way he talked about it
in that line of work, and said that that's what they would do for closure. You know, you'd have someone come in for closure and write it down, and then you burn it in essence, closing that period of your life. And that's what he did in that final meeting.
Well, I thought about this a little bit. Simon even has some stuff where, and kids do this, like, if you got something really frustrating you, they tell you sometimes to write it down and rip it up.
Yeah.
So even for a kid, that's a frustrating thing, not a happy thing necessarily. Here's the one thing that it's hard for me not to giggle a little bit imagining Jordan writing a poem. Right. He doesn't strike me as a poetic guy. I can't picture that without thinking it wouldn't have been very good.
But I mean, but they were talking as if, you know, he actually put some thought into it. Like it wasn't sure just some, I'm the super. And Jordan then speaks to it in the piece last night where he's like, Phil had this great way of including everyone from me to, you know, the janitor at the arena, feeling like they were a part of the bigger picture and giving their thoughts and to the process. I found it really intriguing.
And he said, I'm no poet. It just kind of came out to me that way. But still, that gave me a giggle.
There were great moments throughout, and another example of just the editing and the foresight at the beginning to see how they were going to tell this story. In Steve Kerr describing his father's murder, Malcolm Kerr's murder, Kerr's saying that he would think about his dad during the national anthem. And then they fast forward from that terrible storyline to 1997. They go back to 97 and the anthem's playing. And it sets up the game where Kerr seals the win with a jumper. And the camera's picking up the conversation with Jordan trying to hold, you know, cover his mouth with the Gatorade cup and saying, hey, Steve, be ready. And then Kerr immediately jumping up, almost blurting it out. If he comes off, I'll be ready. and then he hits the shot. It's just the way they edited that together was perfect. I loved it.
I thought it was tinged with sadness too, because Michael was saying he earned his stripes or whatever it was he was saying about that shot. And Kerr was so funny on stage at Grant Park, saying that Michael couldn't handle the pressure and he needed me to take yet another big shot and all that stuff, which was great. But the lost opportunity there, which I hadn't thought about, for Kerr and Jordan to connect over murdered fathers, where Jordan clearly needed help and probably would have really benefited from that untapped resource. And probably, you know, Kerr didn't feel he could approach him with that. It would have been Kerr's to do. Jordan probably didn't know. But Kerr didn't feel he could approach him with it. But how different might it have been if Jordan in some way was vulnerable enough that Kerr, a very bright guy, saw some kind of crack there where he could have just approached him and said, you know, when he was offering his sympathies, you know, I understand in a different way what you're feeling because, and offered two sentences about what happened to his dad. And then Jordan somehow went back to him at some point about that and said, hey, I was wondering about how you dealt with X or Y. And it gave them an opportunity to connect where Kerr earned his stripes in a personal way because they had this unbelievably heartbreaking connection over something very few people could relate on, as opposed to him hitting a jump shot at a crucial moment to win a crucial game. And so I felt a little bit sad that to Jordan, Kerr earned his stripes with that jump shot when there was an opportunity for him to quote unquote earn his stripes on a connection about some torturous human suffering that they could have helped each other with. Not that they had to, but that they could have.
We'll get more into this as the show and the week progresses, no doubt. There's plenty of storylines with this, and everyone is discussing this. If you're a sports fan, you've been paying attention and reliving these big moments. We're also eager to get sports back, and all of the leagues are discussing how they are going about doing that. MLS is no different, and of course, it's a pro sport right here in Nashville. Gary Smith, the head coach of Nashville SC, joins us next. We'll ask him about MLS's plan to return, the big tournament planned or at least proposed by Major League Soccer that will take place in Florida. We'll get his take on that and how soon that actually could occur. Gary Smith next, Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue, 104.5 The Zone. This is the Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone with Paul Kuharski. I'm Jonathan Hutton. Glad you're with us and pleased to be joined by Gary Smith, head coach of Nashville SC. Coach, how you doing?
Well, given the circumstances, not too bad at all, thank you.
Well, we are looking at the circumstances across the board in sports, the landscape of all of these leagues trying to return. And one of the headlines at the end of last week was MLS trying to come up with ideas and ways to get all the teams back together and playing again. And we thought, hey, let's have Coach Smith on and discuss what he has heard. And one of the things proposed is this tournament in Orlando. Do you think that's the answer right now on how MLS can get the ball back on the pitch right now?
Well, it seems as though there have been many, many things that have been discussed, and, you know, whether it does end up being the ultimate answer to everyone's prayers, as it were, for scheduling and back to games. What I would say is that, you know, any process that we can be involved in that keeps us moving forward, the players, staff and the league, more importantly, can get back to some sort of competition, has got to be a positive step. So, you know, when you're trying to deal with a whole league and 26 teams, that cannot be an easy logistical maneuver. So, you know, we'll certainly be ready with whatever the league throw at us. And we're looking forward to being part of the league just starting up again.
Yeah, and I know fans are too. I think, you know, first glance of some of the reporting, it comes across as though this is the solution for this season for MLS. I'm not so sure if that's totally the case that's being discussed. It may be the starting point, but because of CONCACAF decisions and other standings that bear weight with that, and I'm assuming the tournament would not have any bearing on that, do you hope eventually this tournament, quote unquote, would lead to teams playing again in their home cities as the season plays itself out?
Well, from what I've heard, and I've not been privy to all of the discussions on the back to play protocols or what it would look like. But from what I have heard, we could well be part of a regional tournament. The discussion on what does it look like beyond that? Does it become a schedule interconference? Beyond any sort of regionalized work, I guess, the timing of it, when can we get back playing again? That'll have a big impact. I would suspect also that, you know, once we know those timeframes, it will start to put us maybe in a bracket of, do you stay in conference? How many games are there? So, those questions are still out in the open. From my standpoint, from the team and for the league, as I've said, I think the more games that we can get in, the more chance we've got of getting back to normal or normality, the better it'll be.
Speaking of normalcy, would it be awfully difficult for anything to be normal for you? You've got two games under your belt. If they were to throw you into a tournament, that'd be, I imagine, awfully strange given how little your guys have got to know each other in game settings compared to much of the competition you'd be facing in a tournament setting.
Well, I think it's been a different world for us. And the only other team that could be comparable is Miami, of course, because, you know, they've entered the league at the same time. We felt as though we were in a good place. Results for sure weren't as we would have liked. But I would certainly look at the product that we've been able to put on the field, the position of the players in terms of relationships, and certainly the competitive nature of the team. We were moving in, I thought, a very positive direction. And for me, this break has been a very difficult one. Going into any style of regionalized, intense games in a short period of time, it will be very, very tough. There's no two ways about it. There's a lot of clubs that are in a far better position.
Gary Smith with us, head coach of Nashville SC.
You had a couple guys who were affected by the tornado. How's everything with them as they tried to get back to normalcy and then all of this hit where they needed to be back in those apartments or condos that maybe were damaged?
Well, I mean, given some of the things that have gone on in the early stages of 2020, I'm not sure it could have been, any more difficult. Those lads have been able to get themselves back to some, familiar world. I know they've moved into different accommodation. And then, of course, they've had to deal with the restrictions placed on them now in the current virus world. But they're certainly working at their best and doing the best they can in a very difficult climate.
Does the delay in play change how you pursue players in the summer window of free agency? Has this changed a lot of plans for what you had hoped you'd be able to accomplish in year one?
I think in terms of any recruitment or looking at players, it's given us more time to study and to look at players, games and possible future recruits. There's a lot of planning that goes on, as you can imagine, behind the scenes, and that'll continue anyway. The hope is we get more competition to make some of those choices, but we'll come what may, we live in a world where we have to make decisions.
Bundesliga got back to play on Saturday and going forward here. They'll be kind of the guinea pigs for the world, not just for soccer, but for team sports returning to action. You like that soccer's kind of the headliner here in terms of seeing what can work and how people can get back to play?
I think it's great that they've got themselves underway. We saw a couple of nations, the Dutch and the French, that unfortunately curtailed their seasons. If this can work in Germany, I think it's a bit of a trailblazer for other countries, including ourselves. So I think everyone included in soccer is looking at that and hoping and praying that it works out.
Gary, what do you have framed behind you, the kit there? What's the significance of what we're seeing on your office walls?
It's green and white stripes.
Yeah, so the Celtic jersey behind me was signed by an old manager of mine, Martin O'Neill, when he was in Scotland. So it's one of my more prized possessions. And if you look a little bit further around, yes. I managed to grab a Lionel Messi signed shirt. Sadly, not in person, although that would have been quite special, of course.
His house is fully occupied and secured, just so you know.
And then what's the roster there over your left shoulder?
Oh, wow. There's a little story behind that. I won't go into it. You've not got enough time. But that is one of the professional teams my father played for back in the early 60s. And one of our current kitmen, assistant equipment manager, Chris Ammons, he managed to get hold of some old memorabilia from one of his games, would you believe, and frame
That's
it for
great.
Me.
That's cool. Awesome. Yeah. Have you watched the English game on Netflix?
No, I haven't. I've seen it advertised. I've not watched it.
You need to check it out after you see it, and I'll get Hutton to watch it. We'll have you on just to talk about that. It's about the origin of English football becoming a professional game as opposed to just a gentleman's game, where the working man got involved as opposed to the leisure player.
Check that out.
Final thing for you, Coach. We've been watching The Last Dance. I don't know if you've been watching that or not on ESPN each week. And we were marveling at the trash talk that goes on behind the scenes. What's the trash talk like in soccer?
Well, plenty of it. We wouldn't be able to air on this show for sure. I've heard all sorts of different things over a period of time as a player and a coach. I think it's part and parcel with professional sports, full stop. You know, there's a lot of emotion, there's a lot of passion, and there's certainly things said that cannot be repeated.
Were you known as a trash talker?
Not personally, no. Although I'm sure there's been plenty of that in my time as a player or coach. People might have a slightly different opinion.
Hey, great to have you back on. And I know it's been a patient wait as you get the season underway, the inaugural season for MLS here, and then everything comes to a close March 12th as you sit around and wait on the latest news. So here's hoping we can get things going next month.
Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Gary Smith from Nashville SC has been our guest. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. This is 104.5 The Zone. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. PK and Hutton with you. Chad with the week off on furlough. David Reed, the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us. You can follow the show at Midday 180. That's where you can let us know if you'd like in on the next Midday Mixer. Just follow us on Twitter. You can also interact that way at Midday 180. Austin Price will join us this afternoon at 1:15. Reed, you have the headset on.
Yeah, so I was going to – we teased this on Friday, so I wanted to make sure I was paying it off for all those who did remember. So it sounded like you spent a lot of time down on the farm during your furlough week, so I don't know how much of the show you actually were able to hear or see online, the reaction that when John McClain, we were discussing doing our retrospective, our Nashville Sports retrospective, which is another great episode coming up this week as well. But we were talking about the debut of the Titans and the uniforms. And when we spoke to John McClain, he mentioned the fact that the original intention for the Tennessee Titans, the Tennessee NFL franchise's name, was to be the Pioneers, and that was the name that Bud Adams chose. That was at the front of his list, and it actually got leaked while the team was in Memphis, so that's the only reason they kind of shifted and called an audible and went with another name on that list. But for some reason, I believe there has been discussions between you and I in the past over the years of some insights or stories that you've heard that you knew about the Pioneers name long before John McClain mentioned it on our show a week ago.
Yeah, so I had heard that the Pioneers was certainly under consideration because that's what Bud Adams really liked. He liked the name because he was paying homage to the pioneers of the AFL. That was the tie-in with the team name. Thunder was the other name that I had always heard, Paul. But the league liked it. They liked Tennessee Thunder. But they gave that name to Berlin for NFL Europe. So there was a clash there. Adams liked Pioneers. The league liked Thunder. The league people... This was a league decision on the name, too. I think people get it twisted that Bud Adams is allowed to just pick whatever name he wants. It's like uniforms. The league approves everything. The league liked the tie-in, believe it or not, the way I remember it, with Thunder. Thunderstruck and Garth Brooks. There are a lot of songs that tie in with that, with the Nashville theme, Music City. They like that aspect. Copperheads, I saw that on Twitter a lot last week. Copperheads was the most popular name in a fan survey.
And that came, I'll interject here. I remember doing a big piece at the Tennessean. There was a group independent of the team, independent of the league. This is why I think it had no chance. Ultimately, they had a really sleek presentation for Copperheads. They had helmets, they had uniforms, they had a logo. I think there was even a oil derrick on the helmet that showed up in the right light, like it was underneath. It had kind of like a rattlesnake skin or Copperhead skin to the texture of the helmet. And I figured once that got a lot of attention publicly, you know, the league isn't going to go with something that a third party creates and then could claim some rights to and all that.
Well, it was trademarked. It was trademarked by the guy in Kingsport. And so beyond that...
It was a very sleek campaign. I remember I wasn't going to write about something that was, drawn up in somebody's basement.
It was the most popular name in the fan survey. It was also the most hated name. So there, because it was so polarizing, the league did away with it on top of the fact, as you just mentioned, and that's the best reason why, it was trademarked. So... All of the snake names that were thrown out were very popular or unpopular. One way or the other, there's no in between. The league, again, they love Thunder, loved it. And that was going to be it until, I don't know why, Berlin became a problem. And they didn't go with that. So they had talked Bud Adams out of Pioneers. They had decided it wasn't going to be Thunder. And then they tied in because I believe Adams wanted a name that also paid homage to the AFL. The Titans did that as well, as a tip of the cap to a former team in the AFL. So it ended up being the Titans. That's how I remember everything coming about.
Well, that Pioneers being a tribute to the AFL isn't a connection that we made. I can draw a complete zero on this. I don't remember. John says he wrote it. I talked to Jeff Koch. I don't remember him writing it. I didn't find anything, but something from 99 is going to be hard to find. Jeff Calkins in Memphis I reached out to, and he said it didn't ring a bell for him at all. So the Memphis leak remains a mystery as well. What do you got, Dave?
So last week also, in going along with the problem with the Copperheads, an outside entity were the ones that came up with that, and there was going to be copyright and trademark issues. Tornadoes came up as a name that was being considered for a while as well. So had that happened, you may not have ever known me, because at the time I had TennesseeTornadoes.com registered in my name as part of a flag football team that I was going to be a part of. So had that, they went with Tornadoes as the name, I probably could have cashed in.
Wait, you're playing you're playing on a flag football team in 1996.
So yes,
and you had a website in 96 dedicated to your flag football
team.
So
one of the guys that I went to high school with, he was a couple years older than me, that he was involved early on in the flag football leagues around Middle Tennessee. he was also an early adopter of everything internet. And he was going around logging and registering and getting the trademark for certain website names that he thought he could turn around and sell in the future. We weren't even the Tennessee Tornadoes at the time. It was a different team. But I'd always envisioned having a team named the Tennessee Tornadoes. So I went ahead and registered that online with, I forget what it was at the time.
How much did that cost you?
Oh, it was, at the time, I thought it was expensive. It was probably like $20. It may have been the first thing that I ever bought online.
I don't remember where you went to purchase a domain name before GoDaddy existed.
I can't remember how it was done either.
I just think Someone sold
Reed this on the street in Spring Hill.
Well, the thing about it is, I thought about this last week. It could have been, if it were the prop, I went with the proper name, spelling of tornadoes with the ES at the end, okay? So if they just went with a singular S at the end, I would have been completely screwed.
Yeah. I just picture 1999 style tornadoes graphic. I picture terrible stuff. And Pioneers is just such a bad active thing. Chad was saying Volunteers, Pioneers.
Well, the mascot thing, like it would have been very similar. It would have
I think it would have been weak. I think we probably came out as well as they would have come out.
So picking up on when we went to the Tennessee Tornadoes as a name for our flag football team, we basically just ripped off the Arkansas Twisters Arena Football League logo and used it for our own.
How was that? Was that looking good? We'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I'll have to share it with you.
It was received better than the Rams uniforms were received.
1998.
I mean, I don't love the Rams. It always surprises me the level of hate for some of these uniforms that aren't as bad. I do think the level of love for the Chargers is absolutely appropriate.
Austin Price joins us at 1:15. We can take your calls next. You can react to the weekend, The Last Dance, Titans news. We'll hit the headlines first with David Reeds. The Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone.